CD 5.
Vimes reached up and carefully pushed the end of Detritus's crossbow towards a less threatening direction. Inigo talked very fast in what seemed to Vimes to be a torrent of perfect dwarfish, although he was sure he heard the occasional He opened his leather case and produced a couple of documents fixed with big waxy seals. These were inspected with considerable suspicion. The dwarf pointed at Cheirian Detritus. Inigo flapped a hand impatiently, the universal symbol for dismissing that which is not important. More papers were examined. Eventually, with more universal body language meaning, I could do something bad to you, but right now it's just too much bother, the dwarf waved Inigo away, gave Vimes a look that suggested that, against all physical evidence, Vimes was beneath him, and strode back to his troops. An order was barked. The dwarf set off again, leaving the road and heading off towards the forest.
"Well, that all seems sorted out," said Inigo, getting back into the coach. "Miss Littlebottom was a bit of a sticking point, but a dwarf does respect very complicated documents. Something's up. He wouldn't say what it was. He wanted to search the coach."
"The hell with that! What for?"
"Who knows? I persuaded him that we have diplomatic immunity."
"And what did you tell him about me?"
"I tried to convince him that you were a bloody idiot, Your Grace."
"Oh, really?"
Vimes heard Lady Sybil repress a laugh. "It was necessary, believe me. Street dwarfish wasn't a good idea, Your Grace. But when I pointed out that you were an aristocrat, he...
I am not a... Well, I'm not really a...
Yes, Your Grace. But if you'll be advised by me, a lot of diplomacy lies in appearing to be a lot more stupid than you are. You've made a good start, Your Grace, and now I think we'd better be moving."
"I'm glad to see you're being less deferential, Inigo," said Vimes as they got underway again.
"Oh, well, Your Grace, I've got to know you better now."
Gaspode had confused recollections of the rest of that night. The pack moved fast, and he realised that most of them were running ahead of Carrot to flatten down the snow. It wasn't flat enough for Gaspode. Eventually, a wolf picked him up by the scruff of the neck and carried him bodily, while making muffled comments about the foul taste. The snow stopped after a while, and there was a slip of moonlight behind the clouds. And all around, near and far, was the howl. Occasionally the pack would stop, in a clearing, or on the crisp white brow of a hill, and join in. Gaspode limped to Angua while the cries went up around them.
"What's this for?" he said.
"Politics," said Angua. "Negotiation. We're crossing territories."
Gaspode glanced at Gavin. He hadn't joined in the howl, but sat a little way off, regally dividing his attention between Carrot and the pack.
"He has to ask permission," he said.
"He has to make sure they'll let me through."
"Oh, that's given him problems?"
"None that he can't bite through."
"Oh. Is the owl saying anything about me?"
"Small, horrible, smelly dog."
"Ah, right."
They set off again a few minutes later, down a long snow-crusted slope in the moonlight towards the forest, and Gaspode saw shadows angling fast across the snowfield towards them. For a moment he was flanked by two packs, the old and the new, and then their original escort dropped away.
"So, we've got a new honour guard," he thought, as he ran in the centre of a wall of blurred grey legs. "Wolves we haven't met before. I just hope the howl added doesn't taste nice."
Then Carrot fell over in the snow. It was a moment before he pushed himself up again. The wolves circled uncertainly, occasionally glancing at Gavin. Gaspode caught up with Carrot, jumping awkwardly through the snow.
"You all right?"
"Hard to run."
"I don't want to... you know, worry you or anything," whined Gaspode, "but we're not exactly among friends here, know what I mean? Our Gavin isn't going to win the prize for the wolf with the waggiest tail anywhere."
"When did he last sleep?" Angua demanded, pushing her way through the wolves.
"Dunno, really," said Gaspode. "We've been moving pretty fast the last few days."
"No sleep, no food, and no proper clothing," snarled Angua. "Idiot."
There was growling and whining from some of the wolves around Gavin. Gaspode sat down by Carrot's head and watched as Angua argued. He couldn't speak pure wolf, and, besides, gesture and body language played a far greater part than it did in canine. But you didn't have to be bright to see that things weren't going well. There was definitely a lot of atmosphere in the atmosphere, and Gaspard had a feeling that, if things went all pear-shaped in a hurry, one small dog had all the survival chances of a chocolate kettle on a very hot stove. There was a lot of whining and growling. One wolf, Gaspard mentally named him Awkward, was not happy. It looked as though a number of wolves were agreeing with him. One of them bared its teeth at anger. Then Gavin stood up. He shook some snowflakes off his coat, looked around in an off-hand fashion, and padded towards Awkward. Gaspard felt every hair on his body stand on end. The other wolves crouched back. Gavin ignored them. When he was a few feet from Awkward, he put his head on one side and said, "Hurr." It was almost a pleasant noise, but right down inside Gaspard's bones it bounced a harmonic which said, "At this point we could go two ways. There is the easy way, and that is very easy. You'll never know about the hard way." Awkward held eye contact for a while, and then looked down. Gavin snarled something. Half a dozen of the wolves, led by Angua, loped off towards the forest. They returned 20 minutes later. Angua was human again, at least, Gaspard corrected himself, human-shaped, and the wolves were harnessed to a big dog sled. "Borrowed it from a man in the village over the hill," she said, as it slid to a halt by Carrot. "Nice of him," said Gaspard, and decided not to pursue the subject. "I'm surprised to see wolves in harness, though." "Well, this was the easy way," said Angua. "It's odd," Gaspard mused as he lay in the sled alongside the slumbering Carrot. He was so interested when Bum talked about the howl and how it could send messages right up into the mountains. If I was a suspicious dog, I'd wonder if he knew that she'd come back for him if he was really in trouble, if he decided to gamble everything on it. He poked his head out from under the blanket. Snow stung his eyes. Running alongside the sled, only a few feet away from Carrot and glowing silver in the moonlight, was Gavin. "This is me," thought Gaspard, "stuck between the humans and the wolves. It's a dog's life." "This is the life," thought Acting Captain Colon. Hardly any paperwork was coming up here now, and by dint of much effort, he'd entirely cleared the backlog. It was a lot quieter, too. When Vimes was here, and Fred Colon suddenly found himself thinking the word Vimes without prefixing it with Mr., the main office was full of so much noise and bustle you could hardly hear yourself speak. Completely in-